will be consequences. I'm Pam Huso, Fox News. That from President Biden, who also says people will pay for the way migrants were treated after they swarmed the Texas border town of Del Rio. Border agents on horseback are under investigation amid allegations that migrants were whipped.
Everything that these agents did out there in Del Rio on horse patrol was, one, within the law, within policy, within training, and they were not in any way, shape, or form attacking the individuals that they were trying to deter from entering the country. No one was whipped.
Art Del Cueto is the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council. Most of the nearly 15,000 migrants have been released into the country, at least temporarily. Others were sent back to Haiti. The FBI is investigating allegations out of Fort Bliss, where a female military member was reportedly assaulted by a group of male Afghan refugees.
The woman filed a report on September 19th claiming she was assaulted at the New Mexico complex. The alleged attack follows an indictment of two Afghan refugees at another base on charges of sexual and domestic assault. Republican Congresswoman Yvette Harrell of New Mexico calls the news a, quote, vetting failure.
Fox's Matt Finn. Texas abortion law has just gotten even more restrictive. Yesterday, Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed a law that tightens limits on abortion-inducing medications. Starting in December, doctors can give the medication up to 7 weeks after conception. That's down from 10 weeks, and the pills can no longer be delivered by mail. More Americans are rolling up their sleeves, not for a first dose of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, but for a third dose. Millions of people are now eligible for a booster shot despite objections from some federal health officials. America's listening to Fox News. Disappointment in Arizona among supporters of former President Trump. What was billed as a full forensic audit of the 2020 election in Maricopa County has concluded with the same result.
Senate President Republican Karen Fann led the audit effort, saying polling shows nearly half of Arizonans don't trust elections, and commented on a leaked copy of the audit's findings that showed President Biden beat then-President Trump by an even slightly wider margin.
Now, I find it ironic that our Secretary of State and a few others have called this a sham audit, that you can't trust it, you can't believe it. Well, the interesting fact is truth is truth, numbers are numbers.
However, some of the auditors cast doubt on the findings, saying they lacked access to certain evidence due to a lack of cooperation from Maricopa County officials. And two of the cyber auditors alleged that data was overwritten and election results were deleted before the audit. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
The U.S. government appears to be paying closer attention to a mysterious set of symptoms known as Havana syndrome. In a story first reported by the Washington Post, the CIA has removed its Vienna station chief after some criticized his response to dozens of U.S. personnel who complained of symptoms.
The first cases were reported 5 years ago in Cuba. Mark Polymeropoulos, a 26-year veteran of the CIA, was forced to retire from overseeing clandestine operations in Europe. He was targeted during a trip to Moscow in 2017 and began having debilitating vertigo, dizziness, and nausea. This week, the top State Department official overseeing the Havana syndrome response, Ambassador Pamela Spratlin, was fired after 6 months on the job.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin. By tomorrow, Hurricane Sam could strengthen into a Category 4 storm. It's not expected to impact the U.S., but it's still far out in the Atlantic. I'm Pam Huso, Fox News.
Coming into D.C. on New York Avenue, there is an accident right after Bladensburg Road. Currently, there are no delays. On 295, the Anacostia Freeway, on the southbound side, I'm getting reports of a crash right at Laboratory Road, exit 1. Now in Virginia, on 95 southbound in Dale City, there is a disabled vehicle. Right lane is blocked approaching Orbitz Boulevard. And on 66 in Manassas, both eastbound and westbound, there is construction. Three lanes are closed after the Prince William Parkway and before Route 29. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
right.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And the week in Washington has been a numbers game. And a lot of people are asking a lot of questions about the number of migrants who have been released into the U.S. The question started the beginning of the week, and at the end of the week, we still don't have the answers. But we've got some interesting audio of the week to kind of summarize things for you. Now, the week started off with a bang, and the Secretary of Homeland Security is Alejandro Mayorkas, and he was on Capitol Hill. He faced a Senate hearing on Monday, and here's how Ron Johnson asked the question, and you'll hear the answer he got.
How many people have been returned? How many people are being detained? How many people have been dispersed to all points around America?
Senator, I would be pleased to provide you with that data.
I want them now. Why don't you have that information now?
Senator, I do not have that data.
Why not?
For me.
Why don't you have that basic information?
Senator, I want to be accurate.
You're talking about the process. I want numbers. I'm going to expect numbers.
Okay. Pretty cut and dry there from Ron Johnson. So that was the first hearing. The next day, a second hearing, this in the House, and this is Congressman Carlos Jimenez asking a very similar question.
How many people have been returned? How many people are being detained? And how many people have been dispersed?
I would be pleased to provide you with specific data subsequent to this hearing.
Yesterday, you were asked exactly the same question, and you gave exactly the same answer. You'd think you'd be a little bit better prepared.
I work 18 hours a day. Okay, so when I returned from yesterday's hearing, I actually focused on mission.
Okay, so if you're focused on the mission, you might want to kind of figure out the numbers. I don't know. I mean, he had 2 days. Now, it's not like he's the only guy over there at the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, he has a chief of staff. He's got hundreds of people probably that could get that information to him if maybe he really wanted to release that information. So it didn't go away. There were some numbers released about the migrants who had assembled under that bridge in Del Rio, Texas, primarily migrants who originated in Haiti. But reports are that some, if not many, had basically resettled in countries in South America. And then when the word got out that the border was open, they moved not from Haiti, but from South America up to Del Rio, Texas. And there were some numbers going back and forth about how many of those migrants had been returned to Haiti and how many had been detained, but still a big question mark about how many released. And this is how it went down at the White House with Fox News' Peter Ducey asking Jen Psaki the question.
I have a question about the numbers that you gave and the math. So there are 15,000 migrants under the Del Rio Bridge Saturday. If you add up the ones that you say were expelled or released, it's less than 5,000. Say there's 5,000 that are still left. Where's everybody else?
I'm happy to get you a more fruitful rundown for you, if helpful, from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, but the problem is they don't seem to have one. So there's the tap dance. Send it over to another agency, right? Okay, so Wolf Blitzer even asked a similar question.
About 15,000 have shown up. I take it 1,400 have been sent back to Haiti. What about the rest?
Wolf, if it's 10% or 15%, I don't have the precise numbers. I assure you it's a minority of the individuals for the reasons that I have articulated, and they are placed in immigration enforcement proceedings.
Now, we've heard a lot of reports this week about those immigration proceedings where you ultimately would have a court date and a hearing, and typically, historically, many migrants have not shown up for those hearings. They just sort of disappear into the United States. So we'll take a moment to let Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana sum it up so far for the year and for the morning.
I can't think of a single presidential administration
that has broken more plates in its first 9 months. Of all of the president's screw-ups, there's not a single one greater than the crisis at the border.
Well, that crisis at the border got even more intense this week. We saw the photograph, you've probably seen that by now, of a Customs and Border Patrol agent on horseback. And there is a question as to the reins that he is using. There was a Haitian migrant in the photograph. And the question was asked of Secretary Mayorkas early in the week about that. And here's how he explained it. First,
you are assuming facts, if I may say respectfully, you are assuming facts that have not yet been determined. To ensure control of the horse, long reins are used, but we are going to investigate the facts.
Okay, so we're going to investigate the facts. Well, by the time he got on the plane to come home, he got the talking points. And the story changed. So here's how he was talking about it yesterday at the White House.
I made the statements without having seen the images. I saw the images on the flight back, and I made the statement that I did with respect to what those images suggested. The horses have long reins, and the image in the photograph that we all saw and that horrified the nation, raised serious questions.
So President Biden jumped in on it. And, you know, there's a photograph and there's an investigation. And typically when you have an investigation, you let the investigation play out. Then you draw conclusions about those who are being investigated. Kind of one of those, you know, innocent till proven guilty. Not that there's anything to be guilty of here, because according to as many reports as I've heard this week, the Customs and Border Patrol officers on horseback were simply doing their trained jobs. They are performing their duties exactly as they are trained. However, here's how President Biden summed it up yesterday.
It's outrageous. I promise you those people will pay. They will be an investigation underway now, and there will be consequences. There will be consequences. It's an embarrassment, but it's beyond an embarrassment. It's dangerous. It's wrong. It sends the wrong message around the world. It sends the wrong message at home. It's simply not who we are.
Vice President Harris jumped in on it as well. Now, Vice President Harris was in New York to appear on The View. They had a little scare. Two of the hosts actually tested positive for COVID-19 just before the vice president was sitting down on the set. So there was a lengthy delay, and the vice president ended up appearing remotely. As it turns out, reports late in the day say that those positive tests were false. Later testing proved to show that the two hosts were actually negative on COVID-19, but it did throw a wrench in the gearbox. So here's Vice President Harris commenting on the photo, and I'm not sure why she giggles part of the way through, but she giggles again here.
It also evoked images of some of the worst moments of our history, where that kind of behavior has been used against the indigenous people of our country, has been used against African Americans during times of slavery.
So that's the narrative from the administration, from Mayorkas, from Biden, from Harris, from Psaki, the whole group. Well, how does the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, view this? Here's how he addressed it on the Fox News Channel.
Look, President Biden's comments and Vice President's comments both reflect what the Democratic Party has become. They don't give the benefit of the doubt to these law enforcement people, whether they're the police officers holding the line here inside the country or these brave men and women trying to protect American sovereignty on our southern border against the chaos that the Biden administration has created. So the president uses inflammatory language like whipping. There's still a lot of questions about precisely what was happening. We should determine what happened. But these men and women who are doing this work down there in very difficult conditions, they were doing their jobs. And we should make sure that every benefit of the doubt given to them, not suggest that we're just going to go punish them willy-nilly because of a still photograph that we've seen and because the progressive part of the Democrat Party is up in arms and asserting racism. There's nothing to indicate that this was remotely like that. And to talk about this in the same context of slavery, just it's the worst of what the Democrat Progressive Party has become.
In contrast to the former Secretary of State's remarks, this is Congresswoman Maxine Waters' comments earlier in the week.
What the hell are we doing here? What we witness takes us back hundreds of years. What we witness was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. Cowboys with their reins again whipping black people. I'm pissed. I'm unhappy. And I'm not just unhappy with the cowboys who were running down Haitians and using their reins to whip them. I'm happy with the administration. We are following the Trump policy. He is the one that does not follow the Constitution and would not allow those seeking refuge to be able to petition to get into the country.
So there's a sense of the controversy. I'm not sure how closely tuned into it throughout the week you were, but that's some of the sights and sounds of the border, the numbers, and the photo. It's 6:20. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On 95 southbound in Virginia, there is a disabled vehicle. Right lane is blocked in Dale City. Now this is approaching Opitz Boulevard on-ramp. On 66 in Manassas, heads up, there is construction. Three lanes are closed, both on the eastbound side and on the westbound side, after Prince William Parkway and before Route 29. Coming into D.C. from Maryland on New York Avenue, there is a crash right after Bladensburg Road. No delays there. And on 295, the Anacostia Freeway southbound, there is a crash at Laboratory Road, Exit 1. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
56 degrees, 6:22 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update, 6:22. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you very much for joining us. You know, the approval ratings for the president have been taking a nosedive. Gallup poll numbers out this week, 53% of Americans disapprove of the president's job performance, 43% approve. In Iowa, the Des Moines Register, very reputable newspaper, they conducted a poll, 62% disapprove of the president's performance, and 31% approve. Wow. Now, why all the numbers going down for the president? All kinds of things going on. I mean, we talked about the border. You've heard about the $3.5 trillion package. You've heard that, of course, no one under $400,000 in annual income is going to have an increase in taxes. That's total baloney because, number one, look at capital gains taxes. Anybody under $400,000 could pay capital gains tax if they sell stocks. Well, they're proposing capital gains taxes go up. Well, people under $400,000 are going to pay taxes on that, and they're going to be increased taxes. So the 400K line is baloney. Now, you're confused about vaccines and boosters? Well, here's another one they can chalk up. The director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Friday overruled a recommendation by an agency advisory panel at the FDA that had refused to endorse booster shots of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine for frontline workers. According to the New York Times, it was a highly unusual move for the director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, but aligned CDC policy with the Food and Drug Administration's endorsements over her own agency's advisors. So there's confusion there, even the New York Times pointing out that confusion. That's a mess. This is going to be interesting. A report in the Business Insider. Now, the Business Insider is not known traditionally as an unreliable publication that's a hardcore right-wing publication. They have a good reputation, the Business Insider. Well, they have an exclusive. The headline, new emails reveal Hunter Biden asked for $2 million plus, quote, success fees to help unfreeze Libyan assets. Two previously unpublished emails sent by business contacts of Hunter Biden indicate that the president's son requested an annual retainer of $2 million to help recover billions in Libyan assets frozen by the Obama administration. The emails were obtained by the insider during reporting on an unrelated matter. They're not connected to the controversial emails from Hunter Biden's laptop. It appears from the new emails that the Libya deal was never consummated. The documents do offer a window into the mechanics of Beltway influence peddling and the stock that was put in Hunter Biden's political connections, particularly his relationship with his father, who was vice president at the time. That on top of what appears to be an FBI investigation into Hunter Biden, as you heard, we had played last week the audio from some hearings on Capitol Hill where a Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, Scott Perry, had asked the Secretary of State if he had been interviewed by the FBI. And the Secretary of State did everything he could to dodge that question and suggest that it be taken up offline. So lots swirling around Hunter Biden these days. And why is it relevant? Well, it's that whole connection between Hunter Biden and his father, the vice president at the time of this report, and obviously now the son of the president. It is 6:27, Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In the news overnight, two Canadians detained in China have been released from prison. The Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau making that announcement last night, hours after the U.S. Justice Department resolved criminal charges against a top executive of Huawei, the Chinese communications giant. The two Canadians, Michael Kovig and Michael Spavor, were arrested in China shortly after Canada had arrested the Huawei CFO in response to a U.S. extradition request. The deal calls for the Justice Department to dismiss the fraud charges late next year. Kovig and Spavor have spent more than 1,000 days in prison. Federal and local officials say an encampment in the Texas border town of Del Rio, where thousands of Haitian migrants had gathered in recent days, is now empty. We had seen the crowded conditions days earlier. Almost 15,000 people had been huddled in makeshift shelters, hoping the chance to seek asylum. The Department of Homeland Security plans to continue flights to Haiti over the weekend, ignoring criticism from Democratic lawmakers and human rights groups who say Haitian migrants are being sent back to a troubled country that some left more than a decade ago. It's 6:32. It is the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On 295, the Anacostia Freeway southbound in the district, there is a crash right at Laboratory Road, Exit 1. 395 and 695 right now are clear. All lanes are at the posted speed limit. Around the Beltway, both in Virginia and Maryland, inner loop and outer loop, no delays. On 66 in Virginia, heads up in Manassas, there is construction. Three lanes are closed between the Prince William Parkway and 29. And in Virginia on 95 between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not going to tap the brakes on the northbound side or even on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
56 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:33, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us each week. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, for as much as the media is attempting to continue to tear down Donald Trump, he is still the man when it comes to campaigning, and you've got an article about it.
Well, yes, indeed I do. And certainly there are a lot of people out there that still think that Donald Trump is the so-called kingmaker, meaning that if he gives his nod to a candidate, that's a big deal. And it's funny because I did a little review of the media coverage of whether or not President Trump or former President Trump is a Republican kingmaker. And, I found a whole lot of evidence going all the way back to November 23rd, 2020. That's just a couple weeks after Mr. Trump lost the presidential election. And according to The Spectator, they called Donald Trump the Republican Party's kingmaker. That's what his new title was. And the Chicago Tribune on January 26th of this year said Trump the kingmaker, but at what cost to the GOP? Trump is mapping out his role as Republican kingmaker. That came from Vanity Fair in February of this year. Trump's kingmaker status faces a test in Ohio. That came from the Associated Press in August. Donald Trump, the kingmaker. That came from the Wall Street Journal on August 12th. Anyway, it goes on and on. But anyway, you have to wonder, one of the best analysis of that came from Fox News political analyst Paul Steinhauser. He said, Trump's endorsement, and this is this week that he wrote this, Trump's endorsement is hands down the most sought after in the Republican Party, and Trump isn't disappointing. The former president, 8 months removed from the White House, remains extremely popular and influential with Republican voters and politicians as he aims to continue to play a kingmaker's role in the GOP. And you have to also look at the numbers here. Mr. Steinhauser has a count, and so far, President Trump has backed 40 Republicans who are now running in elections this year and next year. And according to veteran political science Wayne Lesperance, he said that the number of Trump endorsements so far this year are unheard of in recent political memory. The Trump nod is the most powerful and sought-after endorsement in the history of American politics, and that's coming from Taylor Butterwich. He's actually the communication director for the former president's leadership pack right now, and that's what he told Fox News. So as he goes off for his big rally later today, he's also called a kingmaker in the press.
The former president's still getting support from a key evangelist.
Yeah, that's right. Let's think about Franklin Graham. Now, when Mr. Trump was running for office, he was very, very supportive of him and asked a lot of his very substantial flock out there to pray for the president during the 2016 election. And he still feels very strongly, and this is what he put on his Facebook this week. This is, again, coming from Franklin Graham, and he accompanied this post with a very friendly picture of himself and former President Trump. Here's what Franklin Graham had to say. With the chaos in our world today and the lack of leadership we see, I miss this guy. Pray for him and let him know you're praying in the comments below. Also continue to pray every day for all of our leaders in Washington. Again, coming from Franklin Graham in a Facebook post. So I looked at the commentary that came out after that Facebook post, and in the first 24 hours, 49,000 comments posted there in the first 24 hours, and I did a little review, and most of these comments, every one that I saw, was indeed very prayerful and also very cheerful. So that's kind of what's going on in that realm today.
Meghan McCain was very vocal and very critical of former President Trump, and she has a new platform, and she is being very vocal and very critical about President Biden.
That's exactly right. Certainly, Meghan McCain, for those that don't know, has become, she's left The View, and she is now a columnist for the Daily Mail. It was an interesting read over there, but her inaugural column was all about President Biden, and here's what she had to say. 8 months since President Biden was sworn into office, the anticipation of a tone change and a return to normalcy has utterly disappeared. The man I once considered a friend and confidant has morphed into a feckless and unreliable leader I no longer recognize. He gives all the signs of stubborn, cantankerous naivete, surrounded by idiotic sycophants. Anyone who has spent more than 15 minutes around politics should easily recognize as the worst type of corrupt bureaucrats. And anyway, that's Meghan McCain having her say on President Biden. But there's also a lot of other people weighing in this week because his ratings are kind of going down now. And a new Gallup poll has revealed this week that he has a 43% approval rating. You have to consider that Vice President Kamala Harris has a 49% approval rating. That's this week. And let's go into what the media is having to say. According to BuzzFeed News, Joe Biden's agenda is hanging by a thread. According to MSNBC, Biden's agenda and U.S. financial health hang in the balance. And then we can go over to Politico. These are two congressional reporters, Burgess Everett and Heather Cargill. They say internal Democratic discord has wounded President Joe Biden's massive social spending plan, raising the prospect that the package could stall out, shrink dramatically, or even fail altogether. And one more, let's go over to Chris Cillizza. He's CNN's editor-at-large. It's impossible to overstate the stakes of this week's legislative horse trading for the remainder of Joe Biden's presidency. Again, this is over at CNN, they're saying this. In fact, what happens this week on Capitol Hill will almost certainly make or break Biden's entire first-term legislative agenda and determine the case he and his party have to take voters into the 2022 midterms and beyond. Unless Democrats can all get on the same page over the next week, Biden's expansive agenda will be doomed, and Democrats' chances of transformational change and how the government impacts everyday Americans will disappear, maybe forever. Again, that's coming from Chris Cillizza over at CNN. So not the best of weeks for the president.
So, you know, it's one thing when celebrities and sports figures get into political endorsements and political criticisms. It's another thing when companies get into it, and companies that you may have purchased from in the past, you may not want to purchase from in the future. What are you finding?
Well, you know, politics has become a factor in the shopping experience, Rick. And, of course, we all know that the shopping experience is so important these days. Yeah, well, whatever. But this is kind of significant. This is coming from digital.com. They kind of monitor all sorts of things that are going on online. They have conducted a poll to find that half of Americans are now unlikely to buy from companies whose political views differ from their own. They had a big poll, and it found that 47% of U.S. adults are unlikely to buy products or services from a company whose political leanings do not align with their own. They say in our highly polarized climate, nearly every aspect of daily life can be considered an opportunity to make a statement about one's views on political and social issues, including where we spend our money. Yeah, that's true. Independent voters are most likely to care about the company's political leanings. This is according to the poll. And that would be 49% of independents say they're not likely to buy from somebody that doesn't agree with them. And the Republicans and Democrats are right behind. 46% of Democrats, 45% of Republicans also say they're going to spurn a retailer with opposing views. So that's kind of where we're standing. This is a survey of 1,250 U.S. adults and was conducted in July and released on Friday.
So you've got a fish story out of Ohio?
I do have a fish story out of Ohio, and actually this applies to everyone else because I don't know if people know this, but most states have an official fish that they have adopted. If you're wondering, in Virginia, the official state fish is the brook trout. In Maryland, it is the striped bass, and in D.C., it's the American shad. And Amazingly enough, there are about four states that don't have any fish that are their official fish. So a TV station up in Columbus, Ohio, because that's one of the states that does not have an official fish, they went kind of cuckoo on this, and they decided that they wanted everyone to become aware that Ohio has no official fish. This is coming from WCMH. This is an NBC affiliate up in Columbus, Ohio. They became very concerned that the great state of Ohio did not have an official fish, so they took a very proactive stance and decided to take a big poll on who should be the fish. So they advised their viewers that WCMH is looking to change this by taking our audience through the legislative process and having some fun, putting a spotlight on the natural world. But before any lawmaker can carry state fish legislation through the Ohio Capitol, a fish needs to be chosen. So they've had an election for the fish up there. They had 100 different suggestions on which fish were the best for Ohio. And based on popularity, at least right now, the most popular one is the walleye, followed by the smallmouth bass, the yellow perch, bluegills, channel catfish, crappies, muskellunge, and goldfish. So anyway, there's a tie kind of at the moment between walleye and bass, and there's even a unity ticket that is considering both the walleye and the bass on the same title to vote on, and the voting is underway, and the results of the contest are imminent, so we'll keep you posted on this. And the little pun of the day is that the final fish candidate would likely face an upstream battle when the issue is brought before the Ohio legislature. So that's your pun of the day, and fish of the day, too.
Whole thing sounds fishy to me. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, as always, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a good day, everybody.
6:46, Saturday morning update on WMAO. We're going to talk to Jim Trusty next. John Gizzi's coming up, 7 o'clock hour. Also in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll have some interesting tips on plumbing and heating for this time of the year as we make that transition from summer into fall. And also on the way, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. But right now, Al BD's in the WMAO Traffic Center.
In Maryland, first on the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, all lanes are clear. You're not going to hit the brakes. Now, if you are traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, I have no reports of any slowdowns northbound or southbound. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound lanes and the westbound lanes are clear. And at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, it's clear between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
56 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:47, Saturday morning update, WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us each week. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Jim, we've all seen the image by now from the southern border, one photograph of a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agent on horseback with the reins of his horse, and that photo has been interpreted in many different ways. And you, as a former prosecutor and now as an attorney, how is it that even the President of the United States and the Secretary of Homeland Security can virtually indict an officer based on a picture in which the photographer says he wasn't whipping anybody?
Yeah, I think it's a very cynical situation, a very cynical concept being perpetrated by folks like Joe Biden right now. I mean, and I think in terms of historical perspective, Rick, you know, we've been kind of living this bizarro world for a few years now of essentially a war on police. And this, I think, takes it to a totally different level. It's a new wrinkle. You know, you have these movements out there, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, defund police movements. And the commonality, and the thing that kind of drives me perhaps most crazy about them, is that whatever their overall politics are, they tend to be very emotionally driven. This is not fact-driven stuff. They just freak out whenever there's any sort of police activity and assume the worst. I think it tends to be somewhat sincere, if misguided or naive or maybe even hateful at times. And that's been going on for several years without grown-ups from the left standing up and saying enough of this nonsense. In fact, they've kind of catered to it and let it continue to live. And I think this situation is actually, again, a notch up from that. Joe Biden is calling out Border Patrol agents for whipping illegal aliens when he and others are in a position to know, because of their office, that it's not true. I mean, if you're the president, it does not take long to talk to your Secretary of Homeland Security or your, you know, anyone on the chain of command and say, let's get to the bottom of this. Tell me what's going on down there on the border. And it's been very clear very quickly that there were no actual whips involved. As you mentioned, the person who took this photo, this iconic photo, says there was no whipping, whether there was a long crop in the officer's hands or not. And frankly, I think what's going on is they're choosing to consciously and falsely demonize Border Patrol as a way of legitimizing the open border policy that they've created. And I think that's just, you know, all of us have political differences, but we all hope that at the end of the day, the people in the highest office of the land won't be so cynical, won't be so sick as to use this type of misinformation and use it in a knowing fashion. And so to me, whether it's the military in Afghanistan or law enforcement on the border or anywhere else in the country, they are being pushed to the point of insubordination. And, you know, this is not negligence. This is intentional behavior. They're trying to change the way this country functions. And I guess the last thing I'd say on it, Rick, is, you know, when you don't have respect for law enforcement, that's bad enough, but it's really not respect for law. And the people that are at the top of this administration should recognize that there's still a lot of us out here that cling to the outdated idea of this being a nation of laws and having respect for that concept.
So I can appreciate somebody seeing the picture and it being troubling. However, at the same time, the agents were simply doing their jobs, following the training from all of the reports I could hear from different Customs and Border Patrol people. They were simply doing their job as they have been trained. And for the president and the vice president to throw them under the bus for doing their job in law enforcement, yes, was the picture troubling because of the angle? Whatever, fine, it's troubling. But these officers were only doing their job.
Right. I mean, law enforcement is a difficult, difficult business. I know that's like this preamble that people give, but I think most people that don't live and breathe in the criminal justice system like I have for years really don't appreciate what the daily existence is like, the stress, the broken marriages, the difficulty in dealing with a highly digitized society that's out to get them. At the end of the day, there's going to be moments that aren't pretty, but it doesn't mean it's anything remotely criminal or even wrong or even over-aggressive by law enforcement. So to me, again, there's grown-ups that should know better. They're making a conscious decision to use this photo deceptively. And it's a bad day for the country, not just for the Border Patrol.
Jim, I want to turn to a story that has gripped the media and many in the nation, but primarily the media, and that is the story of Gabby Petito. Of course, she was missing. Her body has been found. Her fiancé, Brian Laundry, is missing. Many say on the run. And of all of the missing persons in this country, that one story has been the lead story on number of newscasts for over a week now. Put that in perspective for us.
Rick, I'm decidedly torn on this thing. It is newsworthy in a sense, and I'll get to that. But, you know, I think of all the timings of the world, we are fast-forwarding past Afghanistan like it's not an issue anymore. You know, the daily media 24/7 cycle has seemingly moved on and has focused heavily on Gabby's demise, which was terrible. And I'm a little concerned or a little cynical about the thought here that, you know, when you have these videos of police interdictions where she is this attractive girl crying from a fight, that it's really just kind of a version of if it bleeds, it leads. You know, they love the gotcha catchiness from a media marketing perspective of having that type of television. But at the same time, I'll also tell you, as a father of three young women, it's a nightmare. I mean, you can foresee situations where your daughter wants to go across the country with someone, and you say, well, you know, we're going to be able to keep in touch. We're going to FaceTime. We're going to talk, and I'm not going to pick this fight. And, you know, it really is a parental nightmare to have something like this happen. It's a compelling tragedy on a level. And I guess what I tell myself when I get a little fed up with the oversaturation of coverage is, you know, this was a missing body murder case, now a missing defendant case. And so it is newsworthy. You know, whether it deserves lead billing night after night, different question, but I do think there's something to this story that people can relate to in a tragic way.
So a federal arrest warrant has been issued for him for fraudulent use of a debit card, apparently her card, and potentially it could have been after she had died or at least had gone missing. What kind of evidence does that provide if they are unable to tie him specifically to the crime from other evidence?
Well, it's going to be one piece. It's not going to be the entire wall. It's going to be one brick. I mean, if he is caught, this could very well stay a circumstantial case. He may be pretty sophisticated in his approach. He may refuse to show any remorse. And so he may not give any statement if he's arrested. And then you're really looking at a difficult circumstantial case. Now, forensic evidence that ties him to her is basically meaningless, right? It's not going to be something where you have to identify a stranger by his hair or fiber evidence or DNA. These are people that knew each other, that were basically living with each other on the road. And so, yeah, the autopsy is important. The cause of death information can be helpful. The motive evidence provided by these other interdictions where there was obviously some sort of dysfunctional, traumatic relationship taking place. But at the end of the day, things like flight and little things like using her credit card, they help to fill in a picture of somebody who was pretty merciless, perhaps, in killing his girlfriend. So it's good evidence. It's helpful evidence from a prosecutor's perspective, but it's certainly not the end game.
Kind of a bizarre turn of events after he did return home and then reportedly went to a rather dangerous wildlife area. What do you make of him either there or just being on the run in general?
Well, you know, in today's world with technology, it's just so hard to really stay off the grid. I mean, people that are going to try to rough it in an area as difficult as that Florida game preserve, they're up against some really difficult elements. I mean, I think back to Eric Rudolph, the Olympics bomber from Atlanta. That was a guy who was a true established survivalist. He spent 5 years hiding in the North Carolina wilderness, doing things like eating salamanders and acorns to survive. I mean, it's the real deal when it comes to that kind of doomsday survivalism. I'm not convinced this kid can pull it off. It's going to be interesting to see how long this search takes. It's very difficult, expansive terrain, but I don't think he's going to stay missing forever.
Some have said he may have already committed suicide or may commit suicide if confronted by police. You have experience in these kinds of cases. What is your sense of that?
It's certainly a possibility. I've had criminal defendants in cases when I was a prosecutor that did take their own lives, and thankfully, as a defense attorney, I haven't had it happen to any of my clients. But, you know, the question always brings me back to a period of time when I was a baby prosecutor. I was in the career prosecutor school in Houston, Texas, years ago, and we were all hanging out at the Cougar Inn or Cougar Bar, I think it was called, watching the Houston Rockets in an NBA Finals run for the championship. I mean, that tells you how long ago it's been. And as we sat there with a whole bunch of prosecutors, they cut away from this really important basketball game to show some guy in a white truck fleeing a whole bunch of L.A. police. And the headlines started to come out that O.J. Simpson was being chased and that he was threatening to kill himself. And I remember turning to a prosecutor, and I couldn't even tell you what state he's from at this point, but I turned to him and I was watching this. I said, man, I can't believe O.J. Simpson, that O.J. Simpson might kill himself. And the guy looked at me and he goes, nah, he loves himself way too much for that. And it kind of sticks with me that, you know, some of the personality types that are so, you know, nasty and narcissistic to kill another human being and one that has affection for them, they may not be able to cross over to the point of directing it inward. They may just have a little too much of a survival instinct out of self-love. So it's certainly possible that this guy feels remorse and feels stressed and takes his own life based on, you know, what's happened to his girlfriend. But I never bank on it. I think a lot of these guys they're just missing some pieces that allow them to commit murder, but would never really allow them to kill themselves.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law. You can follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you very much, Jim.
Sure, thanks. Have a good weekend.
And you too. The 7 o'clock news next. Then it's John Gizzi, KT McFarland, and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus station.